It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. This is episode 295 of Jumble Think.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumble Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. On today's show, our guest is Steve and Sarah Bollander. They are the founders of Chop Barbershop. More about them in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to JumbleThink, you should go do it right now. Head on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts and search for JumbleThink. To make it even easier, if you head on over to jumblethink.com, you'll find all the links there to places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Pandora, and many more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. Hey there, welcome to JumbleThink. My name's Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a super fun show lined up for you today. It is the last interview from an event we were a part of called Propelify Innovation Festival in Jersey City, Hoboken area of New Jersey, overlooking Lower Manhattan. It is a super cool event all about innovation, ideas, entrepreneurship, and much more. If you're into any of those things, which if you're listening to this show, you probably are, you should check out that event for 2020. It is going to happen probably in the fall. So start checking them out. You can check that out at propelify.com. We also want to thank Podcast Row for setting up the interviews as a part of Propelify. Now, today's show is a really fun conversation. It is with some founders of a business really innovating in the whole barbershop, haircut, salon kind of space. They're doing some really cool stuff in it. And now they're even franchising out their idea to other entrepreneurs who are making really cool stuff with that idea. Their names are Sarah and Steve Bollander, and they are the founders of Chop Barbershop. Home base is Tallahassee, Florida. Let's go ahead and jump into the conversation and learn a lot more about what they're doing, where they're going, and how this whole idea started. We are with Sarah and Steve Bollander, and they are the people behind Chop Barbershop. Cool hair, original people, so much more to that. We're going to get into the story of cutting hair and creating a business around it, and then going beyond what you think of when you think of salons, when you think of haircutting or traditional barbershops, and how you actually create community around it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about their story of how they got into being entrepreneurs and how they're just doing really cool stuff. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Now, I'm gonna premise this with, we are at Propelify in the freezing cold weather in the Northeast in the middle of October. What's up with that? And it is a little bit noise. We got like other interviews going on. We've got weird music behind us and people speaking and all kinds of stuff. So take in the whole atmosphere, but definitely enjoy this conversation that we're going to have.
I was very scared, though.
You have started a barbershop, but the journey to get there has been interesting. We were just talking before, Sarah started in the Navy, became a lawyer. Steve's been cutting hair for 20 years?
29 years.
29 years.
Yeah.
And so they've been on this journey for a while, and now they're doing cool stuff. Tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So Steve is, personality-wise, he's a little bit hesitant to change, but he's quite the dreamer. And as I was litigating and working in the legal field, he was, in the evenings as a barber, he would come home a little dejected because his workspace wasn't really what he envisioned as a cool space and what he had in his head. And so he would draw on his books every night. He's very artistic.
Yeah.
And so he would put together a dream of this barbershop, and he would talk to me about it, and we'd throw ideas together, and he just kept going with it. And I'm kind of known as a pusher a little bit.
A little bit.
A little. So eventually I pushed him. I basically set up an appointment, made him go to it, explained to him, showed him on a handwritten business plan how it would just make financial sense. He wasn't really going to risk that much financially because Steve is very frugal. And convinced him to give it a shot. And then he opened in 2015, and it's just been crazy ever since. So.
Yeah, yeah. It just took off like wildfire. Wow. And I think one of the big things that we did bring, besides just decor and a cool atmosphere, is we really were focusing on customer service.
Yeah.
And the technology that I was still more into old school, writing down appointments on the book. And Sarah was like, no, we got to get a website. And I was like, oh, we don't need a website. And then she's like, oh, no, you got to be able to book it online. And I was like, oh, that's so different and weird. And I fought it. And for months, I'd come home and just thank her for it,
wow.
You know, that she could push.
It's kind of amazing how sometimes you don't know what you need until you are forced into it, and how it becomes a blessing instead of a burden.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a repeated theme in our marriage, I think, because I'm the kind of person who's like, we just got a dog, and you're going to come home, and it's going to be okay, but we have a dog.
Is
and
it okay?
And he falls in love with
the
dog.
It is now. It is now. We had lost one of our dogs, and I was just not ready to accept a new one. But now he's, you know, he's my dog.
It only took 2 weeks. So.
Yeah.
You both have different journeys into having a joint venture. I'm gonna start with Steve here because the business does revolve around hair.
Correct.
Why haircutting? Why did you start in that space? Why did you go into that?
Well, in high school, I struggled, and there was a lack of focus and stuff. And I was always into drawing and designing, and I wanted to either be an artist or an architect. And so right after high school, my parents were going through some bankruptcy and things like that, and we couldn't afford stuff, and I wasn't going to make it grade-wise.
Wow.
So I went to the local Votech and I went into their graphic arts, and they were full, and I didn't expect that. And I was like, oh, well, I'll be a draftsman.
Okay.
And they were like, okay, well, we're full. And I was like, oh, what's left? And they said, well, there's barber school or auto mechanics. And I'd cut my girlfriend's hair in high school straight across, and she was like, oh, man, I pay $30 for this. And I was like, well, I can do that. My mom used to cut my hair some, and I would cut around my sides, and I was like, I'll be a barber.
Yeah.
And I thought, worst case scenario, I'll do it for a couple of years instead of flipping burgers, and it'll get me through college. But, you know, this is my 29th year, and I'm so thankful that, you know, that happened.
Wow.
It's been wonderful. And I think because I'm a people person, that it was meant for me.
Yeah. Do you... You know, you started out from the standpoint of, this is what I got. And did it along the way turn into something that you find pleasure in, or?
Yeah, I think throughout your journey, you're going to second guess, like, everything that you're doing and where you're going.
Yeah.
And I do think that things happen for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And, the people that I've connected with and met and learned from or grew with. And I do believe that, you know, meeting and being married to Sarah was more of a meant to be.
How long have you guys been married?
14 years next month.
Okay.
So, but to have somebody push you into something that you know when you look back hindsight, you realize I needed that.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for it, that you take a different perspective on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sarah, you went from being in the Navy to being a lawyer, and then you kind of burn out from the sounds of the story that I heard. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of stepping back away from that.
Yeah, so I like Steve, which is kind of funny, struggled in high school, and I suffered from a pretty severe case of ADHD, and I made it through by the skin of my teeth, and that's when it was determined that the military was the good choice for me. My dad was like, I'm not paying for your college. So I did that, and I was able to get a hold of it, put processes on it, because that is helpful when you have when you struggle like that. Yeah. So when I went to law school, I did really well in law school, and I expected that I was going to do great in the profession because of, you know, my grades in law school were really good. But what I found out is that my fast thinking and my ability to see things, you know, a little bit quicker and then and decide the solution for them only went so far. And you actually had to draft documents, and you'd be responsible for typos and the right citations. And there's a lot to the legal world that involves meticulous thought. And so I struggled. And I think that people who knew me in that world would love to talk to me in an office about my legal concepts and ideas, but it was just a given that somebody had to check my work because I was gonna make a mistake. And that kind of burden was just wearing on me. It was like I couldn't fix it, and I didn't know what to do, and I would come home just dejected. But then when I would get with Steve and talk about the business and have all these solutions and ideas and thoughts, it was like I was home. It was like where I was supposed to be. And so that's what kind of spurred the transition away from law and into CHOP.
So you said you pushed him into this, and you did it, which is awesome. So did you, from day one, start this out as a partnership, or was it like, this is Steve's thing, I'm just encouraging him? How did that evolve? How did that unfold?
Yeah, it was just Steve and his good friend Danny, who is one of the co-owners. And at that time, I thought, I'll just set them up. There's a lot of setup that goes into opening a business, and I was okay at that because I'd, you know, been doing it for a while as a lawyer. So I'll just handle it for them and get them where they can just cut hair. But then two became three when we started to do more business. And then three became four, and then one shop became two shops, and then two shops became three shops, and it just got to a point with me just setting it up was taking way too much time, and it was determined that it would be best if I did that full time.
Wow. So quite the journey, being that you are now a business owner, and you come from a place of being a stylist. Is that the right, or barber?
A barber stylist either. I still do hair.
How has that changed the interaction? Like it's one thing to be running your own business as a barber in a shop that already exists. It's another thing to start your own. That's got to be a weird transition.
It is, because you know, I feel like I try to live by that lead by example, but then sometimes you become so close to the staff that you almost think like you're a buddy.
Yeah.
And so it is hard to be like, all right, come on, guys, we got to get this done, we got to knock this out. Or, you know, Sarah will be like, did you talk to them about the problem you were having? And I'm like, no, I was, but I will stay extremely busy cutting.
Yeah.
And so I can justify not managing.
Yeah.
But so now, you know, it took us a while, but then we got managers, and so I'm like, oh, I don't know. You know, talk to Brooke, talk to Melissa, you know. And so I just, you know, play dumb. And we've talked to other entrepreneurs that are like, you don't see me making smoothies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm running a company, and I'm like, it's a little different. I've got clients and I'm connected.
Yeah.
And they're and I like to keep, you know, stay on the pulse a little bit. But I can see where it, you know, one day I'll probably have to cut back.
I know for me, my business coach, when we started working with him, first off, he said, I want you to create a diagram of every role in your business and put your name in every place that you're going. And you're working. This is Mike's job. This is Mike's job. And then put the names of your team and where they go. This is so-and-so, and they're the graphic designer, and they're, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And he said there will come a time where you may be the boss because you're the owner, but that you may actually answer to someone else as the developer. And so you may answer to a project manager. And so I can relate to what you're talking about, because sometimes for some entrepreneurs, they're like, I'm running the show. This is my ship to sail.
Yeah.
And for others, it's like, this is my idea. This is my dream. I own it, but I'm going to hire in those managers to run it. And it's a better fit. And I love that you have seen that for yourself, where you fit well into the scheme of the structure and created space for that to be okay.
and it took a while to kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was frustrating for both of us. You know, like you're definitely learning of where your strengths and your weaknesses. And I would go to these meetings, and I'm old school, paper and pencil, and Sarah's computer and keyboard, and she, you know, before the meeting, I grabbed my notebook, and she's like, "You're not allowed to bring it in. It's just a laptop." And again, I'm sure it would be different if it was just a business partnership, but yeah. You know, husband and wife. So I'd bring my laptop in, and I would just fake type as we were going, and I would get faster and faster, and then Danny would look over and be like, "You're not typing anything." And so after a while, she was like, "Okay, maybe you guys are better off cutting more hair and doing less
They're
admin.
They're not allowed in the office for important meetings right now. It's just too distracting."
But we wanted to get a train so we could pass notes back and forth across the board table. And because we have fun, and I think that's part of life. But when we were getting a real official office, you know, instead of figuring out where products and where the boardroom table would go and the whiteboards, we were a little hyper-focused on a train set. And I think Sarah was like, "All right." Like, and, you know, and I got it later, but I was like, we were just playing and joking, but, you know, she's had limited time and was getting frustrated. And we do not have a train in the office.
No train.
Yet.
Yeah.
Because going back to what you were talking about with the list, having your name on.
Yeah.
I struggle massively with that. If we were to do that, my name would be in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And I know conceptually I can't maintain that forever. And so one of the big struggles is getting a business to where it's profitable enough that you can start getting that kind of help that you need.
Yeah.
But then you also have to let go when you get the help.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It's a difficult challenge.
I think that all entrepreneurs can empathize and relate to the fact that giving up roles, especially ones that you enjoy in the growth process, is something that's really good to do, but it's hard to do emotionally. I wonder, as you grow the business, as you continue creating what you're creating, I wonder, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned on this journey?
I think for me, it is that processes are crucial, but you can't get so bogged down in the process that you forget the people.
Yeah.
And I do struggle with that as well. So.
And I can imagine being husband and wife, the people also, it goes deeper than just an employee-employer. It's embedded into every part of life.
Yes, and we our staff is like our family because Steve and I are very parental naturally.
Yeah.
And so it's been a life lesson, too, to really have people come on board that you love and are part of your family, and then they announce they're leaving, and you're brokenhearted because you're like, wait, we're a family.
Yeah.
And being okay with the fact that sometimes, you know, you're the business you created is right for you, but it may not be right for everybody who's in it.
Yeah. Wow. As we wrap up this first segment, I want to take a moment to ask the questions that we typically ask at this point. The first one being, how do you find purpose in what you do?
I think that there's a difference between what we do, between Sarah and I, as far as where my purpose, where I see the stuff and I try to bring it home and tell her of how people are experiencing what we're creating. Because you do get a lot of people like, it's a barbershop. What's the difference? And I'm like, well, come on by and let me show you.
Yeah.
And to bring that type of customer service, but also to connect with people,
yeah,
I think is such a huge thing that people just miss.
Yeah.
And when somebody comes in and they're not my client, and I'm like, hey, Jeff, what's going on? And we're talking to them. They light up and they feel like they have this ownership and this is part of their place. And I think that's part of our purpose, is to make people feel comfortable in that space.
Right.
And bring the community together, each one at a time. Where hers is probably to watch people grow into something that they didn't know they could, because she'll push them a little bit.
And that goes for that's what I was going to say, my purpose really has shifted. It used to be staff-based because we were smaller and staff was, you know, who I surrounded myself with at the time. And now it's gone to franchisees. And so my purpose is to, it's hard to be a franchisee, you know.
Yeah.
You've got this entrepreneurial spirit, but at the same time, you're doing somebody else's brand and so yeah. and dream. And so it's, for me, it's watching those people grow and being there for them and kind of being a part of their process, but also, you know, listening and learning from them and opening up to the idea that they might teach me things that they might do things better than I do it.
Yeah.
I just love that back and forth.
What is the big goal you have for the business right now?
For us, as we grow, I definitely, you know, of course, we want to protect the brand as we grow.
Yeah.
Because that's always the scary thing that you hear is where, you know, the wheels come off the track. But I think where Sarah and I both agree is we, you know, when we think about building something larger, it's never to, it's not like, oh, I want this yacht or I want this. We want to make sure that if something did happen to us, that these people would be taken care of and that there would be, you know, I guess the legacy side of it is to make sure that the business can run without us one day to help more people and protect them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also it's to, so convenience is a big pillar of what we offer, to be convenient to a customer. And I just feel like the more that you have, the larger you grow, the more convenient you become. That you're able to get apps, you're able to perfect your tech. And so I think the larger we get, I really want to put a focus on making it convenient to the customer in ways that the customer wants it. Not us telling the customer what they want, but them kind of speaking to us about what they want.
Wow, love that. What's a big struggle that you're working to overcome in the business right now?
I think we're at that place in the business where we're small enough to need, or we're growing at a level where we need to hire more people, but we're small enough to kind of struggle with that decision, to make sure that when we do expend those dollars, that it's on the right person or the right position. And I would say that's our biggest struggle right now, is understanding, being honest with ourselves about where we're weak, so we can hire for our weaknesses, and then finding the right fit for that particular position.
Yeah. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Chop Barbershop and how they're actually creating community, how they're taking this and spreading this past what they can even do to franchise it. We're also going to talk about integrating technology into a heritage type industry, an industry that's been doing this for a long time. We'll be right back. Chasing big ideas and dreams is often filled with fear. Where do I start? What do I do? How do I overcome the obstacles in front of me? Doing it on your own is one of the easiest ways to make it fail. Instead of doing it by yourself, set yourself up for success and chase your ideas, your dreams, the things you're working on with others just like you. Now, how do you find that community? Well, why don't you come join us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter and start having the conversation there. Be a part of the JumbleThink tribe as we explore ideas and dreams together, as we wrestle through the challenges we're facing. We would love to have you be a part of our tribe. And to make it even easier, head on over to JumbleThink.com and you'll find links to all of the social networks you can connect with us on. We also are working on Idea Camps for 2020. This is a great event where you can come be a part of really wrestling through the deep ideas you have inside of you. You can check that out by also heading on over to jumblethink.com/ideacamps.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now let's jump back into the conversation we had with Steve and Sarah Bollander, founders of Chop Barbershop. We are back with Sarah and Steve and talking about Chop Barbershop. Mm-hmm. Before we get going, how can people find and connect with what you're doing?
So we have two websites.
Okay.
www.chopbarbershop.com is for the actual making of appointments for our site. And then we have a franchise website that's devoted just to franchisees, potential franchisees, and that's www.chopneverstops.com.
And we'll put both of those links in the episode notes. So wherever you're listening, just look probably right below where you're at, and those links will be down there somewhere. So click on them. It's magic. It takes you there. I am really fascinated about what you're creating, because there are movies about black culture in the barbershop. I think about the barbershop that I used out in California when I lived out there. And I think about two things when I think of those things. I think about community, and I think about environment. And probably the two go hand in hand to an extent. The environment you create dictates the community that engages with it. Mm-hmm. This is something I know that's been significant to you as you've set up the business. Talk to us a little bit about, in the early days, when you're trying to figure out, what did it look like? What were the values that you had for the business, and how that translated into creating space for community?
Well, I think in the beginning it was organic, the values, but there was a period about a year in where we sat down as a group and we quantified the values into core values. Like, we looked at what we were and we tried to define it. And one of the big things that we discovered is that the hair for all humanity is one of our core values, is the concept that at any time anybody can walk into a shop and get a good haircut. But it also led to us hiring very diverse staff. And
okay.
So we have people from all walks of life, all ethnicities. You know, we're basically an open door for the staff to have. They collaborate a lot on ideas and thoughts that they wouldn't normally, because you have barbers next to cosmetologists.
Yeah.
Some people are doing women's hair and other people just do men's hair, but they just love the energy that that brings.
Yeah.
So that's one of our values that came out.
Yeah. I think, too, that with, you know, just going back to, like, the space in general, with having, like, the old barber chairs and having some of that history and that patina and that, and the way I built the stations, even, I wanted it to look like a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
I didn't, when we travel, we pop into shops all the time and just to see how we're treated and how it runs. And I felt like I wanted to make sure that it had a soul, in a sense. And I think that, you know, what we've created has really done that. And then you add in those core values that were naturally there. And it just, I don't know, it just has so much more life to it.
And part of the process has been branding. Branding is super strong in what you've done, and it has to be, especially when you go down to the level that you're doing now with franchising.
Mm-hmm.
The brand continuity is like everything in multiplying outside of yourself.
For sure.
You also chose, in doing that, to create your own branded products.
Yes.
Talk to us about that process of going through. You know, we carry this product, somebody goes down the street and gets it somewhere cheaper versus, you know, we're going to create our own products and we're going to brand them, and it's going to be something unique and special to what we do.
Well, when we first started negotiating that concept, it was basically, again, out of frustration.
Yeah.
And I think that's when things start changing and you bang your head up against the wall. And
it's an interesting motivator.
Yeah. because we would, as a small business, we were buying what we thought is bulk, but it's not bulk compared to the big, you know, warehouse places.
Yeah.
And so we've never been big salespeople. We're more educators on what works for the person and helps them out. So we put all this time and effort in, and somebody'd come back in and they're like, oh my gosh, this product was great. Thank you so much. And I thought, I didn't sell it to them. And I was like, oh, did you come back and buy it while we weren't here? And they're like, no, I went down to the, you know, the big place down the street. And I'm like, oh, okay, awesome. So I'm educating.
Yeah.
And they're getting the profit.
Yeah.
So that's when we started to develop our own line, and it made it so much better because it not only protected us, but it protected the barber, that somebody wasn't going to go into another barber shop or salon down the street and just to run in and pick up that same product that we carry, and then they bump into a hungry hairdresser that's like, oh, let me help you with your goals with your hair. And
yeah.
And so in a way that they don't even know sometimes the bigger picture behind it.
Yeah.
It's great for the franchisees as well.
Yeah.
Because the franchisees we've been able to negotiate. I took a lot of time behind the scenes to get great prices for the product. And so that those margins pass to the franchisee, and it creates a whole nother source of revenue that they can look forward to when they sign on for a chop.
How many locations do you currently have that are your own? How many are franchises? I know you have some that are in the process of launching now. So yeah. Walk us through that.
Well, we got to the point where we had 3 corporate stores.
Yeah.
But we are in Florida. So unfortunately, about a year ago, actually this week, on the 10th of October, we lost one of our stores to Hurricane Michael.
Oh, wow.
It was devastating.
It was
a really hard time, but it also kind of precipitated the idea of franchising because we had all the stuff. We were approached by somebody who was interested in the idea, and we thought, you know, let's take everything we saved and try this out. So we have 2 corporate stores, and they're doing great. One's in Midtown, Tallahassee, and the other's in Clarn. And then we have our franchisees open in Tallahassee, Chop East Side. And then we have 2 signed for Jacksonville.
Wow.
One will be in Murray Hill, one will be in Riverside, Jacksonville. And then we have another one in Tallahassee, and it looks like we're signing one for Birmingham this week.
Wow.
Birmingham, wow. Alabama.
Birmingham, first one out of Florida.
Yes, we're very excited.
Birmingham's an interesting. When I would drive from Pennsylvania to Florida to go to college, I'd always go through Birmingham.
Yeah.
And I just remember, it always seemed to rain, like pouring when I drove through. I don't know, maybe it's a South thing.
It is. Daily.
But we're looking forward to doing at least maybe 10 next year is our goal. We'd love to do 15.
I want to talk about 2 aspects here because I think it all comes back to people. Part one is the franchise process, and part two is what employees get because you treat them incredibly, incredibly well. You know, I know a lot of hair places, you buy your spot, you rent it, and then you make money, and then they take a portion of the money on top of that too. So,
yeah.
And so we're going to talk about that. I want to keep on the franchise for a second. So walk us through the process of somebody who says, sounds kind of cool, I want to check it out. What would they go through to become a franchise owner?
Well, they would initially reach out to us, and then we would meet. We're still at the place where we really want to get to know the franchisees and make sure that we share the core values. But once we do that, I'm very techie.
Mm.
So it's kind of one of the fun things I found out about myself when we started this path.
And what do you mean by that, techie?
I love using technology to give solutions to organizational and management problems. And so from the very beginning, without really realizing why, I chose payroll systems that were apps for the staff and for the manager. I chose an e-hub to allow us to all communicate through email, and I created it through a SharePoint platform. I created active inventory systems that were apped out, you know, so all those decisions have kind of culminated in this e-hub idea, concept, in that you can manage a chop from your phone. And I take that like literally because last year we were actually in Paris with my kids, which we had always wanted to go and finally went.
Oh, that's
cool.
And
one of my managers hit a snag in her personal life and had to leave while I was in Europe.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And that's a problem.
Panicking.
Yeah.
Massively panicking. But because I had teched out the management piece, I was able to still survive it and stay over there with the kids and everybody and still go through our vacation, and I was able to manage from the phone. So
that's super cool.
It is.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about the tech side. So a person comes in, they start the conversation, said, I think this is right for me. What are they going to get when they franchise with you?
They're going to get, so we have a company that's set up to outfit the entire location. So we'll basically drop ship or come to them and give them all the decor. Mm. So they just get the space ready based on some proposed floor plans. And then we come outfit the entire location. And from there, they get trained on the eHub. They have an eHub created specifically for their location. We also help with recruiting. So Steve, one of his gifts is to inspire and motivate young hair professionals.
Oh, cool.
So we'll go out to the barber schools in the area, recruit, and then a week before opening, we'll come and do a bunch of team building, because I'm big on personal personalities and getting a team working like a team before you open.
Yeah.
We'll make sure they're educated on the CHOP, you know, brand way of doing things for the customer's perspective. And then we'll stick around for a week after to make sure everything's good and everybody's feeling good. And then we're always, I mean, I think we're too accessible too. I mean, yeah. We can be texted or called at any time, so we'll be there for 24/7 support.
You are focused more on the hair side of things and working with people in the daily shop, not necessarily managing them, but just being in relationship with the, at least the shop that you work in. Yeah. How do you fit into the whole franchise process?
I actually, with going back to the Votech part where I wanted to be an architect, I really geek out over the floor plans. And so I still draw them out. Old school, of course, with a pencil and a ruler.
Nice.
and do it, you know, quarter inch equals a foot. And then I get to, you know, have the architects and I go round and round. And then Danny, our business partner, was an electrician.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny how with it started with Sarah with some legal. And, of course, she got into the tech. And I had some of the ideas and the excitement, and then Danny was the electrician and I would build. So with that, I'll come together and design a couple of floor plan options and give it to him, and then I've worked with our outfitting team and I've designed the furniture part of it, and then he'll create it and make it even a little bit better or easier to take off the wall if like we also learned that from the hurricane.
Yeah.
That we need to be able to, because I always think, oh, we'll just sign a lease and we'll renew it. Nobody told me a roof might come off. So he actually came up with some ideas to be able to, the mirrors and put cleats on the wall and take things off. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's a good team effort of creating that. But I get super excited to go to the expos and meet with the people and share my story and my passion, and like Sarah was saying about the accessibility, is definitely in the beginning, you know, you're kind of living and breathing and eating not only your store but the other people's. And so we're always around, and I work at a couple of stores, and then I'll pop in and probably work at some of the franchise ones and do what I can to just kind of make sure the brand is going and the vibe and the I think it's good that I'm still able, you know, hips and all, to be on the floor.
Yeah.
And be around it.
That's super cool. I also want to pivot here. We talked, I was saying we're going to talk about people, and franchise owners are one of those people groups. The other one is the employees. And I mentioned earlier that a lot of places that are salons have a different model. They go, you're going to buy a spot and rent a spot, and then you're going to pay some fees on that per service and all that kind of stuff. You've chosen to go a different route. Tell us about your model for how your employees work.
So our employees are employees. And that was a solid choice we made based on the fact that we are protecting a brand.
Yeah.
And so from a control space, there are things like making sure that this product is sold in this way and that you're here for this time. And it just really supported the brand. So they're employees, but we have we offer things that most don't. And now Steve, being a barber, was very concerned whenever he would get sick.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, we're not... he's just out, and there was a certain amount of time you could wait before you really needed him to get back to work, you know, because he was part of our financial piece that we were as a family. So we offer 1 week paid vacation, which is so if one of our staff members gets sick, they at least have that 1 week where they can recover and not stress too much. And then we offer an IRA, Wow. So we match 3%. If they put in 3%, we'll make their 3% 6. And we do that because a lot of barbers will find themselves in the 70s, you know, 75, and they're just not able to quit doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. We wanted to, keeping Steve in mind, wanted to offer something different. And then we do half their health care. So health care is another big thing. When you're an independent contractor, it's very difficult to get the health insurance, and we wanted to make that possible. But the thing I'm most excited about for the employees is we offer them the possibility of investing in the company.
Wow.
So like our two Jacksonville stores, there two or three of our staff members are actually investing in the growth of those companies. So they'll have an active side revenue, so they won't have to stress so much and be on their feet so much, you
yeah.
know, in their later years trying to make ends meet.
And you pick pretty high salary points too. It's not like, hey, you're going to get paid stupid money. You're going to get paid good money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our average employee last year made $52,000. So we're really, really proud of that.
I'm sure there's a lot of stylists out there, a lot of barbers that are wishing that they were making that much a year.
Yeah. And to have that with your taxes being paid and the benefits, it's hard to, I describe sometimes the barbers or hairdressers like almost pound pups.
Yeah.
Because they come in and they've been abused and mistreated.
Yeah.
And I think when we do, as Sarah was saying, like the parental side of it, we want them to succeed and we want to help them.
Yeah.
But they're looking at you like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And then you show them some love and, you know, I mean, sometimes you are going to get on to them about stuff, but that's a normal thing. But they eventually start to open up more, and then they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
My taxes got, man, I made good money. I didn't know it could be like this. And it's eye-opening on their end.
One of the things that we were talking about before we recorded today was that you're marrying the vintage, the old school philosophies of the barber shop with technology. And I think that's really cool because you're leveraging the power of both. You have the integrity of community, the power of a specific feel and DNA with the power that technology can be bringing to you when integrated well. It seems like some people go, out with the old, let's go all this way. Or they're like, no, I can't go to the new, I've got to stay with the way I've always done. So the marriage of the old and the new, the vintage and the tech, talk to us about how you figured out the right mix for that and how that looks in what you do.
I think it's a process. And I think, again, with a small business, to some extent, you rely on small things and then it grows. And so when we first started, we knew tech needed to be a piece of it, but we didn't know to what extent. And we kind of tested, looked at the analytics, thought about it. And then we hooked up with this company called Squire, Get Squire. And they're actually a New York-based company. And they had taken it and really thought about it and done a great job of giving a customer interface.
Mm.
And so through Squire, we're able to offer a booking app where you can prepay and walk in, and you can pre-tip, and so you can just walk in, get your haircut, and walk out if that's what you choose to do.
Yeah.
We also have an online booking option, so if you don't want to prepay, you can just go online book, come in, pay, you know, the old school way and leave. If you want to call, because the whole thing of technology just frustrates you, we offer you that too.
Yeah.
So I think the key is, like a repeated theme is, the customer is, we want to give the customer what they want.
Yeah.
We want to give them options because everybody's different. And we want to account for the fact that there is options for each customer.
While we still grow and push forward, we're not going to leave those people behind. That way, you know, my little old ladies all still roll a perm in. They're not going to get left, you know, in the background and be like, oh, sorry, you didn't get the app.
Yeah.
You know, we truly are trying to find that balance.
Or one of the funnest things to do is to teach somebody how to use the app. I love doing that.
Super.
Yeah.
Super cool. You got so much stuff going on there. We're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back for a few rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Hey there, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We've got two kids.
killer episodes next week, episodes you're not going to want to miss. We're kicking off the week with Natalie Coughlin. You've probably caught her on maybe the Olympics or Dancing with the Stars. Not only is she one of the most decorated Olympians of all time, 12 medals total, she's also the first woman to ever swim the 100-meter backstroke in under a minute, a record she went on to beat four more times. And then later in the week, we have a crazy cool episode with Tim Campos. He is the former CIO, Chief Information Officer for Facebook. We talk about technology. We talk about innovation. We talk about working at Facebook and how social media is changing community and a lot more. These are two episodes you're simply not going to want to miss. So if you haven't already, go subscribe to JumbleThink wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure you check out these episodes coming up next week. You're going to love them.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now let's jump into rapid fire questions with Steve and Sarah Bollander.
Pour mettre l'aiguille sur le disque. Mettez le contact. Reposez votre bras.
We are back with Steve and Sarah, and we're going to do rapid fire questions.
Okay.
First rapid fire questions. Let's try that again. First rapid fire question is, what is one tip you'd give someone with a big idea and dream and they don't know where to start?
Google. No, I'm just kidding. I would say LivePlan. It's okay. A great app or program where you can go on. It'll ask you questions and you're able to develop a business plan, but definitely start with a business plan. Don't just assume your idea is going to make money. Like, actually test it out.
If you were to tell an entrepreneur, this is the one lie about entrepreneurship you need to know about, what is that lie?
That all it takes is passion.
Okay.
It is a lot of hard work. And it's a lot of pushing other things that are almost as important or more important to the side occasionally.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most the hardest thing for us.
Yeah.
You know.
What is one book that you think every dreamer or entrepreneur should read?
I would say Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great book. How do you define success?
I think when you still have joy in your life and you're seeing growth happen and you're making a good living and you're helping others along the way, I think it's encompasses a whole group of that.
I'm going to ask you both to answer the next question.
Okay.
What is one dream you still want to fulfill in your own life?
That's a good one. I was just thinking about redoing an RV.
Oh, cool.
You know?
Like an old Airstream?
Well, we've already done that.
Okay.
Yeah. and sold it. And now, I don't know. I think of other little side projects to take my head out of the day-to-day stress. And because we don't really have hobbies and we're made fun of all the time for not having them. But we always have joked about owning a B&B. And, I don't know. Maybe something like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to put some pressure on my children right now. One of my dreams is to have one of my three children come up and want to be involved in CHOP and take it and make it a legacy, like a family legacy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say which one, but I'm just kidding.
Do you have one in mind?
I don't. Any of them would be great.
I'm sending it to all of them.
All
even
three
like the
would be great.
Pressure's on.
Yeah. As we wrap up, we always love to leave our guests have a final thought. So what's your final thought to all of us listening today?
Never be too scared. Mm. And I lived in that fear for a long time of change. And I would recommend that, you know, definitely do your due diligence and look into something. Don't just get a wild hair and then be like, woo, I'm going to do it just because I'm feeling it. But go down that rabbit hole a little bit, you know, and be maybe a little conservative, but go down that hole and try and really look at yourself and find out what makes you happy.
Super
good. I would think it's to be aware that what makes you strong, if you overuse it, can make you weak.
Mm. That's good.
As a leader, if you are really strong at directing and processing and things like that, if that's all you do and you get lost in it, that strength can quickly become a weakness and your staff can dislike you immensely. So you always have to balance your drive to grow with making sure the people behind you are taken care of as well.
Super cool. Thank you so much for taking time out to be here. And I love what you guys are creating. I think it's super cool, and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much
for having us.
I want to thank Steve and Sarah for taking time out to be on the show. As always, you can find links to Chop Barbershop and all that they are creating there by checking out the episode notes. I also want to thank our friends over at Propelify and Podcast Row for facilitating this event. Propelify is a super cool innovation festival. Matter of fact, that's what it's actually called, Propelify Innovation Festival. If you are into ideas, innovation, entrepreneurship, technology, this is an event you have to be at in 2020. Check them out at propelify.com. I also want to thank Podcast Row. They have been an incredible partner for 2019, hooking us up with some amazing entrepreneurs. If you're an entrepreneur and you want to get on podcasts, this is an event you should check out, podcast-row.com, and be a part of what they're building. It's awesome, and I think you should check it out. Now it's your turn. I do this show for people like you, people who have big ideas and dreams, people who know they're called to something greater. I believe that there are awesome things in your future if you choose to step out and go the unpredictable path, if you choose to take the risk and step into the unknown. It's your turn, though. You have to make the action. You have to make the steps. If you don't, your dreams and ideas will never become a reality. So until next time, dream big and change the world around you.
En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois. Lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.